Desi, noun. A person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here.
What up? Oh, God. What up, everybody? I think you're going to have to edit that.
What you talking about? Stop trying to ruin my career.
What up, everybody? This is our second or third. I can't remember. I think it's our second.
Quarterly state of the podcast address.
Which is mainly, I like to, this is more of just a, what's up? We're checking in with each other. We have some exciting news that we're going to announce later, but right now we're going to drop right into checking in with each other. And Akash, what has changed for you, if anything, the last few months with doing these podcasts, doing these interviews? What are you thinking about differently? What's good?
I don't think anything, man. I would love to tell you everything is different, but I don't think anything. I think, I don't know. I think I'm also just maturing in my views on, like, I'm still very pro-India, but the militance is still, like, not fading, but it's not what it was. And a lot of the hate is going away that I had, you know, back when we talked about with Peter. I think that's still, that's kind of just...
Tell me more about that, because that's interesting. What do you mean, like, militance is fading?
I did a pilot for a show about race, and no one seemed like they were willing to be honest. And then I was like, listen, you want me to throw out... I don't care. So I was like, you want me to throw it out there? It takes me longer to trust white people than anybody else. And then we talked about it. But then I was like, do I really still feel that way? And I was like, honestly, I don't think I do. Like, I think my friendship with Andrew has done a lot. And then just, like, moving to New York and here, I just fell in with a lot of... Well, not a lot of more white comics and other comics. And was like, oh, okay, here's some white dudes I trust. And it had been a while outside of Peter and maybe one or two other guys since I had that. And I think it just kind of... And I grew up. I think that's kind of gone, but I still like us the best, you know what I mean? But I think that, like, militants, like the hatred that I had, I think that's pretty much gone, Doug.
I think I feel similarly. While it's manifesting differently, you know, because I don't think I came from the same place as you did exactly, but it's something that Dr. Soni said in our panel at USC that I think I'm starting to understand, more experientially, so I'm not just understanding intellectually, because I always
think
that's
got a word, but I'm gonna let you slide. Go ahead.
It is a word, man.
Experientially?
Yeah, man. From, like, an experience standpoint, not just from an intellectual standpoint. All right. You know. But my point is just, like, holding space for my community without making it the only community. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I can be a part of this South Asian community and still be a part of every other community that I find myself in, and one does not take away from the other, or one is not more than the other. It's just another one. And I think that part of my, I guess it is insecurity or just confusion, maybe, made me feel like I had to lift one of those communities up,
right,
above the others. And I think I'm just realizing more and more that I don't. I think it's been interesting for me being in Canada, truthfully. The last couple months, and just the way that they see things so differently.
It is a different place.
It is a different place. It is quite literally a different place. But it's just like so much of these ideas, I mean, so much of the stuff surrounding race and ethnicities.
It's so different. That's what I was saying. Like, my boy from Canada actually talked about this 2 weeks ago. He was like, why do we always talk about race here? What is that? He just couldn't understand. He was, like, frustrated, like, throwing his arms up. Like, why do we care so much?
Well, it's not that. Well, okay, so I'm going to say two things, right? So I'm going to say that in Vancouver, it's different, right? And I think a lot of the stuff that we talk about race is Well, I lost my point because I'm actually, it's this, you reminded me of something that I was just in a wedding in New York, and you remind, my cousin lives in Brampton, which is a suburb of Toronto that's very, very heavy in South Asian population.
Right.
And he was telling me when he first came out here, and he came out from India in 2003, and, you know, he has a postgraduate degree, and he's a hustler, right? He came out to a new country because he wanted to do better for his family. He was by himself. And he was driving by a McDonald's, and it said, now hiring. So we went in, and he asked for an application. Now, first of all, there's a lot to unpack there, but I'm going to first talk about just the humility of South Asians when it comes to when they move here and they're like, we'll take any job because that's right. how you're just going to start, which I think right. is something that we as a generation have lost, mm-hmm. like across cultures, yeah. right?
We're very entitled.
Yes. But he said, so he went in and asked for this application, and it was a white guy, a manager, and they said, oh, you know, we actually, that position's filled. We just forgot to take down the sign. And he said, okay, cool. A few days later, he drove by and the sign was still up. So he went back in and he said, oh, you guys need a new position. Can I get an application? He said, oh, no, sorry. We just still forgotten to take the sign down. And my cousin he was like, whoa. Now, I'm somebody that's like very qualified to be in this position. I mean, overqualified, truthfully. I mean, yes, yeah, postgraduate education. And and they're not even giving him an application. He said, what else could it be other than that I look different and that I sound different?
Right.
Right. So I do think that I want to caution us from just like dismissing race as a thing. Right. But there is people are treated differently around here. Like it is different. People are, there seems like there's more mobility here than there is in the States. Like people can, where they're not as tied to the ideas of what their culture means. So what I mean by that is like, you know, hip hop in the States, like in blackness, you know, if you're not black and you subscribe to some cultural elements of blackness, people find that weird. Whereas in Canada, they don't find that as weird.
Yeah, probably. I mean, in a hip hop sense, hip hop is foreign to them too. They're all foreign to hip hop. Like hip hop right. is born That's and true. Bred here, got to them whenever it got to them, but it's from another country still.
Right. You know what I mean?
You know what I actually do? I have this. This ain't a podcast thing necessarily, but this cultural appropriation hot button issue, I just do not understand it. I do not get it. It infuriates me. Here's what bothers me. Is it hot button
now?
Yeah, I mean, we're still talking about the show that I worked on. That was what the episode was about, cultural appropriation. Here's what I cannot wrap my mind around. I don't like cultural appropriation necessarily, but I also don't mix a lot. Like if I'm hanging out with Indians, I'm not just inviting white people over. If I go to a Diwali function, I don't want any of my other race friends there because I'm not cool with this. Like I don't want you taking my thing. This is our thing. We're good with that. But if the idea of a melting pot that we all celebrate in America that we are taught is the only way to do it, how do you not appropriate? This is a melting pot, you idiot. If you make a stew, the potatoes don't taste like potatoes anymore. They taste like meat. To a degree, because that's how it works. You cannot ask for a melting pot and then say, no, you don't take things from us. That's definitively not how a melting pot works. You want a salad bowl, I'm with that. Believe me, I'm number one on board with that. But that's what you're going to have to do if you don't want appropriation. You can't invite a white guy to India's Independence Day or to a holy function and then him say, oh, that holy thing, you can't expect him to be like, oh, that holy thing is cool, I'm going to leave it to them. You know what I mean? Like, it's not how it works.
Well, no. That's a strong point that you're making. It's hard for me without, I don't see cultural appropriation as being as rampant as you're experiencing. I haven't talked about it as much with people. Like, that's not something that comes up.
It's a big internet thing. Social media morons are all about.
Well, I did get a tweet. My friend, we were doing a dance party. I threw on some Bollywood music in the makeup trailer.
Right.
And we were doing a dance party. And the makeup lady, she had bindis because she's from England. And so she put one on my co-star, Olivia. Yeah, yeah. And then we posted a photo. It was a funny photo of like Olivia kind of looking at me kind of like whatever while I'm dancing behind her like a crazy person.
Right.
And it was just a funny thing. And someone tweeted at me saying like, can you stop culturally appropriating the bindi? And I didn't respond to this person because I wasn't going to give it the time of day. I was like, first of all, you tweeted at me as if I was culturally appropriating the bindi, which also didn't make sense. But I was like, what? Why is that cultural? That's just, I'm just sharing parts of my, we have to allow space for me to share my culture with people. Like, you don't want to do that. That's not something that you are interested in doing, Akash. But I like that. I like sharing parts of me with people that I love.
But I can accept your views because that's consistent. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can't call out a hypocrisy within it. There was Indian rapper. I remember some, I'm not going to call his name out. People probably figure it out there, but some pop star, Selena Gomez or Iggy Azalea or something, did a music video that was like a Bollywood music video. It was basically like a Bollywood wedding, like saris everywhere. They're all dancing Bollywood song. He's going off on Twitter about how this is wrong, cultural appropriation, blah, blah, blah. Hundreds of tweets. And all I could think was, dog, you have a white wife or you have a white girlfriend. This is going to be your wedding if you get married. That's all this is. A white girl dancing around. So how are you? How dare you be offended? I don't understand the inconsistency in that logic. And now it's this thing that we can all do. I can date anybody from any race, but if somebody who I'm not dating takes something from my culture, I cannot believe they would do such a thing. This is an outrage. It's all over the place.
I don't mind if someone, I don't know that I didn't see the video, but I think it's always funny. I mean, I think it's funny. If you're doing something about Bollywood without being Indian, like it's strange to me only because it's like, it's so disjointed. It's so disconnected in my head. Cause like in my head, there's no, usually at Indian weddings, there's very few non-Indians there. You know what I mean? So, but I also like, it's like, why is that offensive? I was just, okay. My cousin just got married. And he's married to a white girl. She's Catholic, and they did this beautiful fusion ceremony. It was nice. Her bridesmaids at the Sangeeth, some of them were wearing saris. And I was like, cool. You wanted to partake. This is the Indian part of the wedding. And you wanted to respect or be a part of that in whatever way. Like, did it look strange? On some level, but it was also cool. You know, it's like, why are we, there's real shit going on in the world, people. You know what I mean? Like, there's real shit.
And I said this to Andrew yesterday. Andrew and I were talking about just everybody complaining. And I said, what's weird in today's society is how empowering it is to be victimized. We have made that a real power position in America in 2015, and that does not seem like a good move to me.
Well, I think that actually you're touching on something deeper than that. But being the victim is always very powerful. Now, when you think about a victim walks in and they're like playing the victim, right? It shifts the entire tenor of the room. All attention goes towards them. And everyone's shifts. They hold immense power. Victims always hold immense power. It's a very fascinating thing, the psychology of victimization, because they go out thinking that they don't have any power. They're seeking power while they actually, like, on some level, know that this is the best way of getting power. It's a very twisted
thing. Which is a phenomenal point, and I would love for more people to listen to this podcast so that point could get out there, because that's a great way of putting it. It is empowering thing. But I also remember when I was a kid, now I'm 100, but when I was a kid, there was a whole slew of sayings about not playing the victim. Quit whining was a big one. Suck it up was a big one. Just get the job done. Life isn't fair. You remember what life isn't fair? That's all I heard for 15 years growing up. Life's not fair. Anytime I said that's not fair, life's not fair.
I was talking about this with somebody actually yesterday, because I was talking about the theater company that I have, and we were talking about anytime that there's change. If we look at change like a pendulum, right? So the pendulum is always swinging back and forth. So it goes to one side, and then in response it goes to the other. And what we're always hoping for when it comes to anything is to come for the pendulum to fall still in the middle. Right. That's ultimately where we're going. What we're going towards. And I think what you're responding to is that the pendulum has very much shifted in our lifetime from suck it up to everyone's a winner, right?
Yeah.
That's where the pendulum is right now. And what you're saying, and what I also agree, is we need to find the middle ground, because there is a balance, right? Life isn't fair, but life sometimes can be fair, right? And we can help make life fair sometimes, right? And so there is a nuanced, you know, it's just going from black to white right now, I guess is the point I'm making. And I think about it with race. I think that that's happening with race a lot. And I think it's actually happening with feminism a lot. I'm going to use feminism first. Feminism is going to this point where I've noticed, and Neethu talked about it actually, where now women that want to have children and be mothers are somehow shamed. Like, there's a shame.
But doing the most noble thing on the face of the planet.
Settle down. I'm just saying that there's some shame to that. And what we want to acknowledge is that, yeah, sure, we went to a response where people weren't, like, That was the response for when women weren't allowed to have careers. So now they're going to the point where they want to be super career oriented. And now we're coming to what I hope is the middle ground and what we need to talk about as the end game, which is where you can hold space for women that want to be a career and that you can hold space for women that want to, like, be a mother and step out of the workforce, and that both are strong women by doing so, because they're empowered in their choice, right? Empowered in your choice. For men, like, if we, I don't know if masculinism is a thing. I don't think it is, but I'm making it up right now. We're going from, you know, be a man, don't show emotion, be stoic like John Wayne, to let's embrace our sensitivity.
Drake.
Let's... John Wayne to Drake, which is now the title of this episode, by the way, from John Wayne to Drake. And what we need to acknowledge is that we need to go to the middle ground. And that's always my big point. And it's easier for us, as I think it's actually easier for us as South Asians to see this point in the spectrum of actual black versus white in racial relations. But we, and this is where I was talking with my theater companies, we don't only want to do plays that talk about race. Sometimes the point we want to make about race is that you just have a play about something and the characters are multi-ethnic in a way that you wouldn't have thought about it. And that's the only comment about race we're making, because that reminds people what the end game is. But what I'm going to say to you, and my whole point, is that you have to, like, be a little bit more understanding to that this is simply a part of the pendulum swinging back and forth. And your outrage at the pendulum swinging back and forth is also, I don't think, conducive to us getting to the middle ground.
Man, shut your ass up.
Man, that's good. That was a long, long-winded point, man. Good Lord. If y'all listening made it through that, you're special, special people. Because good Lord.
Shut your ass up.
All right, Chris Rock. Is that what's happening right now?
No, I was trying something different there. Listen, man, I get it, but I also think it's my job to bring us back toward the middle.
No, that's fair. And if that's what you're saying, I think that that's fair. I think that what we need, but don't say that that side is also wrong. Just say, hey, guys, let's bring it back to the middle.
Well, that side is making my job as a comic way harder than the guys who would let you say whatever and not get offended. Like, you can think about that if you want to, but just from a comedic point of view, in terms of my occupation, my job was way easier back then. Say whatever you want, brother. You good.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, I was watching Friday Night Lights the other day, and I thought about this because, you know, Coach and Tammy Taylor, right? An amazing relationship, but they, you know, some kid messed up. And he said something on an interview about, like, and that was disrespectful towards the coach in a subtle way, in a passive aggressive way. And Tammy was watching Coach get pissed. And the lesson nowadays would be, let's sit him down. Let's have a conversation. Where are you coming from? This is what I want to do. That was my impulse, right? From the way I've learned and the way that I'm, you know, societally understand things. And she was like, these kids need some compassion. He was like, no. And he calls them. He's like, no, they get enough compassion. And he picks up the phone and he calls his assistant coach and says, bring everyone. It's like 11 or 1 o'clock in the morning. And he makes them, in the rain, driving rain, do wind sprints up the hill.
Yeah, that's dope.
And he's like, and it was just an interesting thing, because we don't see that anymore as being okay. And we don't see that as being like an okay. And listen, I'm not trying to say I celebrate that over the other as well. I think that's, I know you do. And that's why I'm coming in with nuance here. That's my role in this podcast.
Yeah. You a punk.
Is to say that sometimes that is a relevant tool to be used. Like, I'm tired of, like, the idea that like firmness or strength is somehow... I guess I'm really talking about this. If we want to get real truthful, it's for a long time I shamed my masculinity. I was taught to shame my masculinity because I thought my femininity is the thing that people wanted, is the people that were okay with. And so I shied away from my firmness or my strength or my aggression that was a part of me. You know, I would block it in, and it was, I guess that was just, I look back at that with some sort of frustration that I did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would never call it femininity, because I'm too masculine.
Oh my God! This is you're so much more like this is so ridiculous. An audience,
yo,
that somehow made it this far. This
you
guy is
a hoe.
You
and that's that. You know what I mean? So let's talk about that. Why you a hoe? That's okay, the name of this episode.
Women out there, I want you to call up Akash and be like, "Yeah, let's go." Let's go. What? Let's go on a date. Take
me
home.
You want me to
fight
these girls? Is that what you're asking me to do? That's weird, don't you? I would never hit a woman. But if I did, I'd beat their ass. No, I'm kidding.
Go on a date with this guy. And I want everybody to hit him up. Say, yo, let's go on a date. And then you taking me home at the end of the night. You man. You so manly. Take me home.
Yeah, I will. I'll drop you off curbside like a goddamn gentleman. Yo, there's another thing I want to talk about, actually. This is not related to the jokes we just did, but I think we got to start getting to the root of a problem instead of just assigning. And now we kind of got into a little beef over the gun stats you put up. I didn't have a problem. I'm actually anti-gun, but you put up a graph of, like, American gun statistics versus everybody else's, and I didn't necessarily have a problem with what you said. I just noticed the graph. It was, like, 2 more deaths per 100,000 people, which is 2 more than it should be, but I was like, the graph is making it look way crazier than that. If you look at the actual numbers, it's 2 more than it should be. But then I started talking to Kanishka about it, my cousin who's a psychiatrist who we're going to bring on this show at some point, and we started talking about it, and I was like, maybe the root cause is mental illness. And then he was like, no, that's actually not. Most of these killings aren't mental illness. An hour later, ironically, we got an email about the exact same thing. But here's my general point. We should look at the root of something. Guns are a problem. Sure, I think we should get rid of guns. But instead of being so quick to say, hey, this is the problem for everything, it's guns or it's this or it's that, let's actually look at the root. And maybe a lot of these kids, you know, like they have sociopathic tendencies or whatever that are brought about by a horrible home life. Like no one is ever like, hey, let's all be better parents.
No, I think you're right. First of all, I think you're totally right, but I don't think that you can address the root with also not like without like I think it's naive. Forgive me for using that term, but I think it's naive to think that if we just start addressing the root, that it will magically solve the problem. Because here's the thing: the root causes that you're talking about will take generations to fix, and so while we're doing that, let's also just take the guns away.
Well, I don't have a problem. We do I agree that. About the guns. Now, I will disagree with people just because that's what I do. But right. I also think if someone tries to bring about the root of it, then we immediately attack them. Oh, this any black dude who is like, yo, we got to do better as parents. Or if someone says like, yeah, police brutality is a problem, but black on black violence is a bigger problem. The hatred they get. And well, that's cool. You can get
upset. Let me ask you a question. Because not to interrupt you, but just on that point, right? Kendrick does a really good job. Like, if you've heard The Black of the Berry.
Oh, he goes in. That's my favorite song on a CD.
But he also goes in on himself and, like, the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And I think he actually holds space for, like, both sides of the coin. And people celebrate. I don't feel like he's gotten that much hate for it. Is that – or
nah,
am I wrong?
He's pointing it at himself as opposed to the community. Now, before Cosby's – whatever happened within the past year. Let's keep in mind what we thought of him before this, right? Our perception of Cosby before that, the only blip on his radar was him. It was demeaning, but like him saying, we got to do better as black people. We got to stop looking at white people to help us. That makes you seem like they'll call you a coon, Uncle Tom, whatever. They will go so hammer on you. And it's like, listen, I understand that maybe he's not doing it right, but you can take from that the point of, you know what, though? We can stop looking to white people to help us. I hate the idea. As someone who I think definitionally pride in being Indian is, I don't want white people's help. I don't want it. It's on us to fix us. And everybody else is not willing to say, hey, let's look at the root and what we're doing wrong, and then we'll worry about all this other stuff. I don't know what the order should be, but like if you bring about, hey, what's the root cause of this? Maybe we're not doing a great job keeping the family structure intact in America. You look like such an ass. People will crucify you.
No, you're right. I mean, you're right. And I agree with you. I think that, again, and I'm always going to come from the standpoint of nuance, is that these things aren't just black or white. And I think that what we're addressing is the idea that people are desperate for black and white right now. In the world,
yeah,
because everything feels so uncertain and nothing, and it's the more
it's also convenient.
Well, it is. Well, sure, but I think that's making people sound as if they're lazy. I just don't think they see another way. I mean, we're so much more aware of just how complex society is that it's like even more complicated to figure out how to move through it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm not trying to insult anybody. I think we all just take the path of least resistance. That's human nature. That's it's actually a smart thing to do, but it just isn't beneficial in cases like this. Like I say on social media.
That's a smart thing to do if we are, like...
Programming-wise. We're programmed toward efficiency.
What I'm saying, Yeah, but that's that program. That program, let's just go there. That program's antiquated now because we don't live in the wild.
I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what it is.
I'm now going off on that. Like, okay. Now this is where I'm saying that, like, the whole point, if everyone's going to talk about, like, that we're, like, higher than animals, then we need to fucking start acting like we're going to evolve. And the point where we evolve is that we don't have to be so reactive to this kind of programming that you're talking about. This is where self-awareness is so important to me. This is where growth and just like accept like that work is so important because that's the only way we can actually live up. We're a society that's built on we are above everything else. So if we're gonna be above everything else, you goddamn well start acting that way. And the only way to do that is if you stop being so reactive to your programming. Because I agree, that is our programming, but it's no longer relevant. We don't live in the fucking wild.
Yeah.
So let's get that's so important to me. I mean, that's the most important reason that I'm on this journey of self-care and all of this sort of stuff is because we're living in a world that says that I look out in the water and I'm seeing just boats parked in where someone else's home is, right? So the reason that we're okay with that is because we're above those fish that are allowed to live there. Cool. If they're above that, then we need to start acting like that. That's what I'm sorry, that was my soapbox moment. I apologize.
Nah, man, do you? I usually end with something funny just so I don't feel too vulnerable, but you know what I mean? You could take that trick, or you could not.
I'm good with that. I'm good without that. I think we should jump in. There was some community stuff. Should we jump over there? Let's do that.
Go ahead.
I'm in a place now. I was favoriting some of our tweets. Let's go back. Let me go back. We got one from hold up a sec. Oh, yeah. Ramya One, listening to American Daisies and hearing Akash Singh talk about Superwoman 2. Yep, yeah. She was pretty awesome. Is that one? What is her name? Lily Singh.
She's on every billboard in America. If you don't know who she is by now, Arjun, you got it.
I said Lily Singh. I said the name. Right. I just don't know any of her stuff, man. I know I'm behind, but just listen to DJ Rake on American Daisies. She is a serious genius. So much respect. Kieran 116, bruh, she's taking on your bruh.
That's the homie. That's Kieran from the USC panel. She and I still keep in touch.
I know, and she's taking on your bruh. Bruh, hey fam, I got son. 24 eps to catch up on for American Daisies. How did I let it get this bad? Get it right.
Nah, she's trying to be a doctor. Bruh. You gotta do what you gotta do. Stop trying to save the world.
She says this, I feel like y'all need a better, more in-depth understanding of how the incident with Rini is propelling change on our campus. And I said, so it'd be great if we knew someone on campus who was a listener who could then give us that context. Yeah. And she said, have me on the show. I don't feel like I'm writing.
Hey, girl, you could just call me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to get on this podcast.
I know. It's just right. If we were, or at least record something that we can then air. I don't know. We'll figure something out. And then it was Cinnamon Root. Cinnamon_root said, re-listen to the latest episode of American Daisies, and I could listen to Dr. Vern Sony all the time. Guess what? So could I.
And then marry him.
Then we had a couple emails that we should talk about.
Yeah.
First of all, Mad love to Swagistani for telling us that we need to drop an episode. I love that. Let's talk about creepy brown men, okay? This is an anonymous email. And it said, you guys said you wanted to hear from us about the creepy brown men stigma, so thought I'd share my opinion. I grew up in NJ, and I'd lived in and around the area since then, so I've grown up with a lot of Indian people. I never really thought the Indian guys that I'd known were very creepy or controlling. I've noticed this more in the young guys that move here from India in their late teens to 20s. They definitely have some sort of creep factor, just the way they look at women or try to talk to us. It's not pretty nor very flattering. excuse me, they also sometimes seem as though they're hiding something. Like you try to get to know them, but they're just not able to hold up the conversation after and after something else because they can get pretty handsy. Oof. It's pretty hard. It's hard to explain, but I think it has to come from the fact they didn't grow up here, and culture, of course, has a huge influence on how you treat others. Sometimes I feel like they grew up watching or seeing these men pursue women who are not interested and think that's how it should be. And of course, this isn't everyone. I've met some guys that are very kind and don't ever give off that vibe. But the controlling things I've seen in guys that grew up here, but not quite to the extent of men that grew up in India, but it's there. Maybe that's just how they saw their parents. Who knows? I have a harder time explaining that one. What do you think about that? It was the first person that talked to us about that issue, other than Pallavi.
You know what?
It's an interesting point, though.
Which point?
The fact that what she's talking about, the Indian men that are coming from there versus the Indian men that grew up here.
Yeah, you know what? I would like to know these people who refuse to date Indians. Like, Neil, we got to the root of it. And right. I think we saw what that was. But the girls, in my mind, it's probably a father thing. Or, have you dated a lot of Indian men here who have mistreated you? Like, maybe one did, and that's horrible, and we should do better, but is that a reason to swear off the race? I don't know. I just think it's always a deep, like with Neil, I think it's always a more deeply rooted thing than...
Sure, but you're talking about something different than what this person, this anonymous person, is referring to.
Okay, you know, you got
they're
that.
They're just talking about what she's viewing from an outsider standpoint, looking at these men and interacting with them. Actually, it does bring up an interesting point about culture, and, like, the culture of dating is complicated. It's complicated to know what the rules are and what people like. And, you know, it's funny when you go down to Brazil, people don't, you know, a lot of people don't, they're very different about the way they date when they're in Brazil than they are in the States. I mean, the States, you got to you have to play back. You know what I mean? In a way that is quite strange. And Aziz talks about this, but in France, that's also the interactions I've had with French women are very strange because I'm playing back and they're like, what are you doing? Like, do you like me or do you not? And I'm like, oh, wait, what? Oh, okay. That's different.
What do you mean? Play back.
You just have to play cool, you're not interested. You know what I mean? Play back. Chill. Yeah. I'm be real aloof. I'm gonna be real. I'm too cool for this. That's that's the basic nature.
I have a bit where I say if you're dating, I guess it's an American thing, but you gotta treat your girlfriend like parsley. Like, you know when you order a fancy plate of food and you got some green leaves on the side? That's how you gotta treat your girlfriend. Like, I mean, I guess it's cool that you're here, but I don't need you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But that's a cultural thing, man. That's just a cultural thing that allows for women to feel safe to grow in whatever way they want. Because again, it's always about safety. So I think that's an interesting point about the South Asian men that come here and don't understand the culture of dating and that it's a different thing all entirely.
You know what pinged me from that email was she said something about how Indian men are kind of reserved and she thinks they can't hold the conversation because they don't want to talk or I don't remember exactly what she said.
They're hiding something.
Yeah, they're hiding something. You know what I think it is? We're not taught to, at least I was taught, you don't talk about things. You just keep that. That's family stuff or whatever. That's for you to deal with. That's not for you to deal with some person you just meeting. You keep that with you. And in America, particularly, I'm going to go ahead and say white America, openness is really celebrated. Emotional openness and talking about these things. And I'm always like, yo, you a weirdo, dog. What are you telling me all this for? You know what I mean? And that's a thing we've talked a lot about with vulnerability and all that, but that's new to us. Mm-hmm. We weren't taught to be open growing up.
No, I mean, I actually had an interaction with my family the other day. My father was getting emotional about something. And I was like, Dad, that's the second time I've seen you cry in my whole life. And my mother looked at me and she was like, what? She was like, he cries all the time. And I was like, what?
Not in front of you, though.
Just what you're saying is totally right. I didn't have the model of showing open feelings. Me and my father definitely, my dad, you know. So yeah, I agree that there's some of that. People, more other women, I'd love to keep hearing from y'all. So I want to thank this anonymous person because I'm honored that they sent in some info and their thoughts, and I'd love to hear more. We have one that was actually, you know, it's interesting, is racism and mental illness. Thoughts from a graduate student studying clinical psychology. First of all, they say, quick comment about my last email that was read on air. Thank you, Arjun, for feeling protective of my identity. I just wanted to share my thoughts. Akash, you stupid too. I wanted to mainly comment on the short
description. Stop reading this email right now.
One is to mainly comment on the short discussion about racism and mental illness. I'm a graduate student studying for my PhD in clinical psychology and wanted to offer my two cents. Of course, I'm by no means an expert, but I think about mental illness probably a lot more than the layperson. I wouldn't consider racism a form of mental illness, and I think calling it does a disservice to those actually suffering from a mental illness. I would say most, if not all, people would agree that racist is a bad and not very horrible characteristic. Mental illness is already shrouded in so much stigma that if we now associate it with racism, it's going to create even more obstacles for those seeking mental health care services. I can see how calling racism a form of mental illness can offer some more compassion, but I think thinking of it as a taught characteristic can achieve the same aim without marginalizing those with an actual mental illness. This reminds me how there is a stigma that those with mental illnesses are also very violent. It's just not true. The vast majority of people diagnosed with mental illness do not act out violently. Most symptoms of psychopathology.
This is the email I mentioned earlier. This is an hour after my cousin and I talked about this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had just told me, like, most of these killers aren't mentally ill. Like, we're right. Quick to say that, but they're not. And having him and then this person say back to back, like, no, you can't just say everybody's got mental illness. I actually don't think it was a stigma thing. I think we were being overly compassionate as a society and saying, oh, these guys are suffering, when in fact a lot of them are just sociopaths, from what he was saying, from what my lay understanding of his explanation was. They're just sociopaths who grew up in an environment maybe or whatever where, like, they would act out this way. But mentally ill people aren't usually killers.
I mean, the truth is, the sad thing is that these serial killers, when you read what they're talking about, they're just acting out because they're angry and they have hatred. It's just that they have the tool to act out in a way that allows them to kill people. Now, there's a subtle form of acting out that happens for all of us. You know, if I'm angry, if I feel wounded or something, and then someone irrelevant to that cause of wounding, right, comes near me, I may act aggressively towards them just out of hurt. But because I don't have a gun, no one's dying. It's just they may get their feelings hurt for a minute, and then we can talk about it and move forward. But if you kill somebody, like, there's no going back from that. This is why I think we need to take guns away, personally. You know, another reason.
Well, my thing, so from talking to my cousin, the understanding I got, well, I mean, I just pitched it to him. I was like, how much of it is probably environmental? He's like, probably a lot of it is environmental. So that was my thing, is like, we don't ever...
I just think that fixing the environment is going to take I think aggressive. I think you're right. I'm agreeing with you. That needs to be addressed as well.
All the focus on guns, if we took that much focus and turned it toward, hey, let's be better parents. This is unacceptable the way so many of us raise kids and live for ourselves after having children or whatever the issue is, then I think that would at least be a start. It feels like we're not allowed to start that conversation because then you get blamed for judging and you get talked down.
Can we do both?
Sure. I'm just saying we're not doing one, in my opinion. We're not really calling attention to one. There's a lot of gun talk.
But I think the big point of this person's thing is that racism is about racism, and that racism is a taught characteristic, and I think that's true. I don't think anyone's born racist. I think they're taught to be racist, and I think I think that's something that's important, because you know what it does for me? It means that we can get rid of it. You know what I mean? That, you know, maybe not permanently, because I mean, there's always going to be cuckoos out in the world, but it does make it easier to sort of like think that we can then address. We have a couple more emails, but I think we've run out of time. Here's the situation we find ourselves in, folks. I'm shooting a lot more than
famous.
I was anticipating.
He's busy being famous.
And Akash is quite busy as well. What we're going to do over the next couple months is we're going to experiment with having some guest hosts, which is going to be really exciting. One of us will be there, I think.
Yeah.
But we're going to have some guests. We're experimenting. There's going to be a little bit of fluidity we ask that you bear with. I think it's actually going to be – I'm really excited because it'll be nice to have a different voice and bring a different voice, because we are – you know, we talk about community, so we want the community to have a voice. And we are still working on figuring out the best way of doing some sort of call-in show. The thing is that because we don't have a radio, it's like not an actual radio station, obviously. It's a little bit difficult to figure out the logistics of how a call-in show would work. But I'll throw it out. I'll crowdsource this. If people out there have a great idea, I've heard of Blog Talk Radio, but the audio quality is quite bad there, and we do care about quality.
Everything we do, high quality, if you can't tell.
So if people have some ideas about that, please get at us. This was our State of the Podcast, which means we're going to jump back into our regular schedule starting next week. Thank you for listening. If you made it this far, I appreciate it. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.